Good morning. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. This morning we have seven cases on the docket, but only two scheduled for oral argument now. And it's sort of fallen apart this morning. And we're going to switch the second and first cases and take Volmich versus Neiman first, and then Kreitzer versus Kasdan, because one of the lawyers in that case is running late. So, Mr. Lane, you're here and ready? Okay, I'll ask Karen to call the docket then for the first case.
The court will now call Hellman, Volmich, versus Bridget Gregory-Neiman, and Mr. John Lane, Arbiter of Appellate.
Okay, Mr. Lane.
She's prepared to put on the record about why Mr. Steinbull is not here.
Okay, yes, for the record, Mr. Steinbull is suffering from a stomach virus and called in that he would not be here for this argument, but you're welcome to go ahead.
Thank you, Judge. Again, my name is John Lane. I'm attorney down from Wichita Falls. Would have been happy to work with Joe had I gotten a call. I didn't realize until I arrived this morning that he was sick also. Here today representing Braden and Tracy Neiman, home sellers in this case. I don't want to waste the justice's time going over the briefs, because I realize those will be given their full due course and review, Mr. Steinbull's as well as my own. I think, however, what would be beneficial would be a quick encapsulation of some of the issues and really getting to the meat of what the court found in this case. Obviously, this case comes to you as an appeal on my motion for summary judgment, wherein the court found that we were successful in defeating at least one element of every single one of the claims of the plaintiffs in that case, the home buyers, and that we were successful in the presentation of every single one of the elements that were necessary to prove the affirmative defenses that were being presented by the Neimans in that case. Now, a review of Mr. Steinbull's brief, it appears to me that what he's trying to do, I of course wish he was here to speak that for himself, but it appears that what he's trying to do is to say that somehow the court struck new ground here in ruling that the TREC, Texas Real Estate Form, and its as-is clause, that somehow the court has elevated this contract to set a precedent saying that in all cases, that boilerplate language that's in there will be an as-is defeat for defenses and claims that come up later. In reality, that's not what happened. That's part of what happened is the court did determine that, yes, this was, in fact, an as-is contract. But in that finding of that, it did look at the totality of the circumstances, which is what it is supposed to do under case law, and found that because the Volmiches hired their own independent inspector, that independent inspector gave them a very detailed, with pictures, listing of all of the things that it found, and that the things upon which, the damages upon which they later complained were actually found in their own inspector's report, that they had time to review that, they testified that they reviewed that, and that review happened during the course of a time when they could have walked away from the contract, even negotiated an extension to do so, and had sufficient time and decided based at that time they knew what they were getting into and moved forward. The other side to that is that there was also no evidence that was presented that there was any sort of fraud or that there was any sort of failure to disclose. And that really becomes important, because the only representation that was made by the testimony of Mr. Volmich himself, the only representation made between the parties, who never had a conversation, never talked prior to closing, was the seller's disclosure statement. And so the plaintiff's entire case hinged upon this seller's disclosure statement and whether there was fraud or whether there was failure to disclose in that. And to try to bring to the court's attention that there was evidence sufficient to defeat the MSJ, they had a three-pronged attack. One was Mr. Volmich himself, who testified that he thought they should have known, and that that should have known was based upon his living in the house subsequently. And of course, that case law is in here that the should have known argument with nothing to back it up is really no argument, no evidence at all. The other two prongs actually centered around the same incident, wherein the yard workers, the guys that were hired to come work together, came over on one date, and their testimony was that they went up to the door, talked to Mrs. Nyman, and that they, through the door, viewed some water on the floor. They never asked what the source of the water was. Mrs. Nyman never said anything about the roof is leaking. They just said, literally, we saw water on the floor, and had no explanation for why that was. Didn't ask her if she had spilt anything, didn't ask anything.
What about the buckets and baby pools? Where does that come in?
That is a year and a half after the house sold. And that is during the occupancy of the Volmages. That did not occur when the Nymans owned the home or lived in the home. And so what happens is those two guys say that it leaked on that particular day. The problem is, to prove their case, they had to show that the Nymans, on the date that they actually signed the seller's disclosure statement, the only statement between the parties, that it was false or that they somehow had knowledge of it of that date. So even if you were to take the yard guy's testimony and somehow extrapolate that was evidence of roof leaking, which we never even got there, even if you did, that puts it at a date about 4 months after the seller's disclosure statement was signed. I'm sorry, more than that, more like half a year after the seller's disclosure statement was signed. So that in and of itself isn't even evidence that on the date that the document was signed, there was somehow malfeasance on the part of the Nymans.
Are you suggesting there's no duty to amend the disclosure statement after signing it and before closing?
There is a duty. I would agree with you that there is certainly a duty that if they were to know something that they should amend that.
Well, I thought their observation was after the disclosure was signed and before closing.
That was their observation, but their observation and testimony was also that leak was not due to something on the roof, that they actually were unaware of what the lawn guy said. But the only testimony in the case is that during the time they occupied the residence, the roof never leaked and they never had it repaired. Now, the inspection report shows that sometime prior, there was prior repair and prior leakage, and that was pointed out to the buyers prior to closing. But the Nymans didn't really live there very long. They lived there just a couple of years. And they said during the time they were there, that never happened. And there was no testimony offered to show that was not the case.
What about Mrs. Nyman's note?
The note,
astonishing.
Yeah, the note is a weird, odd, I'll call it a red herring, but it is, I think, the only reason we're here this morning is the note. And she passes this note across to them at closing, or passes it through the realtors, that says, hey, you need to keep the gutters clean because the gutters, if you don't keep the gutters clean, it can back up and cause leakage. Now, or something to those effect, the exact words are in the brief. She doesn't say it did. She doesn't say it has. She just says it can. And her testimony and her husband's testimony was, but it never did.
Well, there's something strikes me as odd there, because if a gutter backs up, it's not going to leak into the house. So why would she articulate some non-logical problem unless that non-logical problem had happened before? But a backed up gutter is not going to leak in the house.
Well, the only answer I can give you is the answer that she gave in her testimony, which was, I was raised in a family where this was an issue for my father in the home that I was raised in. He drilled into each of us that we've got to keep these gutters clean. And the gutters do fill up due to the amount of trees that are around this residence. And that was just one of her, obsessive compulsive is, I guess, the best way to say that. And so she said, I was letting them know kind of the way I always viewed it and always lived there. But what you're talking about with the gutters, we kind of get outside of the evidence that was offered. But the problem is with the roof line, where they're also talking about the gutters backing up, the evidence of where the guys saw the leak on the floor, inside of the house has a roof pitch about like this, that goes through the interior of this really large room. Where they are saying they saw water on the floor was about 15 feet in from where the gutters are. So that in and of itself raised its own issues that Mr. Simel didn't even follow down that road, because it's hard to sync up. Well, even if the gutters leaked, what in the world, how would that be in the middle of the room? Okay. And finally, all I would say is that the inspection report becomes very important, because the inspector had the very detailed report. Mr. Volmich testified that he did read it, that he knew what was there, that he went over that with his realtor, and he had the chance to back out of the contract at that point or to ask for certain things, none of which they did, and waited until after closing to decide to then bring forth basically their list of demands, went along with the list of things that were noted line by line in order in the House report. And for those reasons, we would say that there was no evidence to, even when viewing things in favorably in their light, there was no evidence that there was somehow fraud on the part of the Nymans, that there was somehow failure to disclose. There was zero evidence at all apart from supposition and, well, what does that note mean? And what could she possibly mean at the point? The only evidence offered is it is what it is, and it was her testimony as to what that says. And apart from that, we would think that due to those circumstances that the trial court's decision should be upheld.
Well, going back to the language of the as-is clause, is it the Nymans' position that the clause itself negates causation, negates reliance?
No, I
is
think
there one element that cuts across all of the causes of action on that?
Well, but in this case, I don't really think it cut across all the causes of action. I really think it was more indicative of the affirmative defenses, which were only part of the reason that the court ruled in their favor. But that being said, I do think the as-is clause, the courts have upheld that there are that particular clause, that particular language from that particular contract can be held as a valid as-is clause, which would cut off some of the remedies that someone is entitled to given the totality of the circumstances. Right. And with the totality of these circumstances, the court was well within its right to determine that was the case.
There's no disclaimer of reliance language in this clause.
No, there's not.
Questions?
No.
Okay.
I don't want to cut you off because your light's still green.
Well, I think I've set it up, so I'll sit down. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Your case is submitted and you're excused. And we will call the second case. Thank you for driving all the way down here.
That was a nice drive.
Have a nice one back. Mr. Dunleavy, you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. Good morning.